Oh, dang, you should have told me you were wearing the Spider-Man shirt. I would have changed.
I didn't. I love it. I love it. That's awesome. That's great. That makes me really happy, actually. Oh,
now
man.
Now we're twinning.
That's right, man. How you doing? I'm really excited to have you on the show.
Oh, man, I'm so excited to be here. This is awesome. I'm doing good, man. I got off of work a little bit ago.
Yeah.
And, yeah, man. In general, though, it's been good. Still live in North Carolina.
Yeah. Are you in Raleigh area?
Yeah, I'm in Raleigh. Nice. Kind of like right on the edge.
All right. Yeah, I was just up there for a wedding and a bachelor party a few months ago, and I like the area. This is my first time kind of checking it out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Mr. Will Fitzgerald got married recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So that's right, because he still lives here, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a good time. Faux show. Yeah, man, I am super excited to chat with you because I don't often get to talk to someone that I know so much about their Full Sail time. So this will be interesting because you're somebody who really, I think, took advantage of your time there. And that's something that I want to make sure that we cover, because I think there's a lot of lessons there for people to understand about, like, no matter what you're doing, like how to kind of find opportunities to get involved and to make a name for yourself and to make connections. And I think that's a skill that you have that a lot of people need to understand a little bit better.
Yeah, for sure, man. Excited to get into it.
Awesome.
I would say you were there the whole time too, just like beginning to end pretty much. Actually, yeah, beginning to end. And then even when I was working there, you're still there. So
yeah,
the whole time.
Yeah. I love it. I'm looking forward to chatting about it. We can tell secrets and stuff. Okay. But why don't we start with, like, as you were growing up, where did you grow up and what kind of got you, or what did you think you were going to do? Like as you were growing up, was it always games or did you have something else in mind first?
First off, I'm from Alaska.
Okay.
So, I mean, people that know me know that about me, but yeah, I'm from Alaska, but I'm from the big city, so don't get too excited. So I'm from Anchorage.
Anchorage, nice.
So it's just like regular big city stuff, but you know, it's still pretty disconnected from the rest of the states. So like gaming as a career just wasn't even something I even thought about until I basically started college. I don't know, I kind of bounced around. I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. I was trying to do, like, engineering because it was just kind of what everybody up there did.
Yeah.
I thought about doing something with computers. I think I was in computer engineering specifically when I first started college.
Where was that? Did you, up in Alaska, you were doing college first?
Yeah. Yeah, gotcha. So after I graduated high school, I went straight to... It's the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Okay.
Which is like basically all the other colleges there under that same college. So it's like they got like a monopoly going on. So it's just, it's all University of Alaska Anchorage.
Gotcha.
But you know, if you live there, it's dirt cheap. And it's basically like it's a regular college, but you can get those community college prices there. So
that's not bad.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm like, you know, regular college, community college prices. But yeah, like I think. Maybe like a year. No, it was like less than a year in. I decided that I was like, I didn't even get to the engineering classes yet because I was like, I wasn't too sure what I wanted to do. So I only picked like really general classes that didn't go towards anything specific.
Right.
But yeah, and I was telling my advisor there that like, you know, I didn't really want to do engineering anymore. And I was like, kind of thinking about games and, Lionel knows about this too. Something about seeing No Man's Sky. I don't know what it was.
Really?
But I was like, I was watching TV one time. I don't remember where it was, but they were watching one of those late night shows and like Sean Murray comes on stage. And I was like, I'd never seen a game person outside of the game space. And I was like, oh man, this is real. People can do this for a career.
Interesting.
So for whatever reason that sparked it. But before that, I mean, like every game that had a level creator, that's where I was. I'd spend more time in the level creator than playing the game.
That's really interesting. Let's talk about that a little bit because that's to me, it's a gateway drug, right? Like it's,
it is.
And I love when people say that because that tells me that you're thinking about the guts of a game, right? Like you're thinking about what it takes to make it and how you can either make something more fun for yourself or create some content inside of an experience that you want that happens the way that you think it should happen. And the tools are there to do it. Like it's not easy to do, right? But those tools make it a lot easier than it could be. What got you in there? Like what made you do it? Like what kind of things were you trying to accomplish in the editors?
I think like what first got me into it was like, it was before I'd even seen a level creator. Like this was like early YouTube days. I'd be at my friend Seth's house, and we would like would go on YouTube and watch these Halo 2 mod videos, and people were just making like the wildest stuff, and like you know we'd play like you know like custom games with like 4 controllers or whatever, but we're like, man, what if we could make it better? What if we could do all this? What if we could change things? But like we didn't have any computers that were high spec enough to do anything close to that. But then Halo 3 came out the next year and like introduced us to Forge, and then like you know, for the first time ever you could, and this is before I had like online or anything, so like you know when I was playing it at my house, that's all I would do. It's just like I couldn't play online with nobody, so it was just like Forge.
Interesting.
And I would always make like the craziest maps and then you know unplug the giant brick hard drive, you know how these things are right here, right, bring it over to the friend's house and plug it in, and we'd all mess it because they had online but I didn't, so we'd bring it over there and then get everybody involved and play the crazy maps that I made.
Interesting. So that's interesting. So what was it, just you didn't have the ability to get online, or it was just like the family decision, you're not going to be online and do this?
I just didn't have the ability. We had dial-up until I started high school, and I finally told my mom, I was like, we need modern internet, because it wasn't like everybody had dial-up. I was one of the dinosaurs. I was like one of the last ones at the time to have dial-up still, and I was like, it's just not gonna work anymore. Oh, so like man. I don't think I had like internet at the house until like I think it was probably that summer right before high school was the first time I actually had internet capable of playing like online games.
Oh man, you said it was your senior year?
No, not senior year. It's my freshman year.
Freshman year. Okay.
I might have misspoke there.
No, yeah, I wasn't sure I heard you. Right. So yeah.
Oh yeah. No, like the, you know, leaving middle school, going into high school that summer was when I finally had online capabilities.
Man, you know, what's interesting, I'm a little older, right? So, my experience was, you know, I had dial up up until, oh my gosh, till I was in the industry. Right. Like it was.
Yep.
So it was a different time, and Wi-Fi wasn't a thing.
I got a question for you now.
All right.
Were you trying to play online games using dial up?
Oh, absolutely. I played EverQuest on dial up. Like that was what most people did at the time.
All right. Now that you said it, like I wasn't playing my Xbox games on dial up, but you better believe I had Club Penguin and RuneScape booted up.
Right. I didn't do much console multiplayer on dial up. That's true.
Right.
That's true. Yeah. But man, and as a matter of fact, I didn't do much console multiplayer until I got my 360. So that was what, 2006, I think.
Yeah, it would have been 2006.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? This is my I keep it up here as a relic now because it doesn't work anymore. This is my original. This is the first Xbox 360 I ever bought right here, right?
Mm.
This thing is so old that it actually doesn't have Wi-Fi capability.
Oh wow!
Yeah, like
oh yeah, I had to buy the external adapter for it.
Yep,
that snapped it into the back with USB. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even have. I just had to figure out to, you know, I just got a long enough wire and snaked it through the apartment. But like, yeah, I didn't even realize that until way later. I dug it up and I was like, oh yeah, let's play some games. And I was like, why doesn't it connect to the internet?
Yeah,
what's wrong with this thing?
You know, as a matter of fact, I think I still have that adapter somewhere. So I need to get my 360 out. My 360 ended up doing the whole Red Ring of Death thing. I got it repaired once, and it kept doing it. And I did the thing where you could like put Q-tips in there to hold the fans to get to do a hard reset. And I'd have to do that like every like few days. Like, it ended up being wild.
Yeah. With this one, it had the red ring. This is like a slightly newer model, 'cause it's the Halo 3 model, but I sent it into Microsoft one time and it never had any problems again. Like in fact, it worked up until I think about last year. For some reason, I tried turning it on the other day because I dusted off after that From Software announcement. I dusted off Armored Core 4 and was like, let's throw it in the thing. And like this thing had just enough power to like spit out the last game that was in there, and then it just died. And I was like, well,
at least you got that. What was in there? That's the question.
It was Black Ops, Call of Duty Black Ops. That was what was in there.
Come on, I thought it'd be better than that.
Well, I'm that guy. I like those games, but
no, actually the Black Ops game was really good on that console.
Oh man, that was the I think that was funny enough. That was the first game I think I ever actually played online was Black Ops, because by the time I had got online, Halo 3 was like 3 years old at that point. So yeah.
Was Black Ops or Black Ops 2 the one that had the option of buying it with a night vision goggles? I can't remember now. There was like a collector's edition.
It had to probably be Black Ops 2, but I think Modern Warfare 3, I think usually Infinity Ward does it every couple of years. They'll throw in the night vision goggles. Except for, I don't think they did it with the most recent one, but it was probably Black Ops 2 or Modern Warfare 3. It was in that era.
Yeah, you may be right. I just remember that being a significant, interesting thing. You know, like, that's when, like, collector's edition started doing some wild stuff.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. I remember my friend, he had the, for Halo 3, he had, like, the Master Chief helmet. And I was like, oh, I'm going to one-up him. When Halo Reach came out, I had the big, it's like the big statue with all the characters on it. And I think that was the last one I bought until the first Spider-Man game, which you can see up there. That was like, I stopped it after Halo Reach. I was like, it's too much money.
Yeah.
But then I was like, I need this one. I need this one.
I hear you. So you are at college. You're deciding that you want to do something with games. You see No Man's Sky, which is funny because we were talking about Starfield earlier. And every time I think about Starfield, I think of No Man's Sky because of how that game, like, I get the same vibes. So that's, you know, just a little aside there, but I'm curious, like, what did you do now? Like, you're in a place where nobody makes games. You're in a place where you, it sounds like options to learn it are limited. What, like, who did you talk to? How did you kind of head down that path?
You know, I spoke with my college advisor and I told her, I was like, well, like, you know, how do I get into games? That's what I want to do. I want to do games now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we were talking for a while, and eventually she actually, of all people, this is at University of Alaska Anchorage, because the University of Alaska Anchorage is kind of like a gateway college. You kind of take it to get to the next place.
Okay.
So they're used to suggesting people to go to other places, because they only offer, like, engineering and medical stuff, pretty much. But, she actually suggested Full Sail, and I was like, really? So, like, I called him up. And then, we got to talking on the phone, and I was hooked from that point.
Do you remember who you talked to? Who was your admissions person? Do you remember? I mean, it's fine if you don't. Like, it's a long time ago. Like,
no, I know. It was, I think it was, like, was it Michael Kip? Is that his name? Kip? I don't know. I think that's who it was. It was funny. I didn't, like, talk to him again, though, until, like, I think right before I left Florida, I encountered him while I was still working there. I was like, oh, no way, you were the guy that, like, got me all hooked up and Full Sail and everything. And, like, now here we are. But, yeah, I think that, yeah, that was my guy. It was Michael Kip, I think. I could be getting it wrong, but I'm pretty sure the last name was Kip. But, yeah. So then from there, I had to figure out how to make it down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite the trek. And there was not any online options really at that point, right?
There was, but for me, it was like you can start online and do like the first couple of courses, the kind of first general courses before you start the specific stuff. But then you need to get to campus. And I got lucky and I got a scholarship, but the scholarship like only covered like school and it didn't cover like living or anything.
Right.
So up until that point, I had been saving like a bunch of money, but obviously it wasn't enough to live like a couple of years on. And I just started online. I was going and I got lucky and unlucky at the same time. I got in a car accident.
Oh.
And the car wasn't that badly damaged, but it was enough to total the car. and I was able to use that money to go to Full Sail.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a the universe will find a way, right?
Like exactly what happened.
Interesting. So, and what year are we talking here? When did you start at Full Sail? That was 17?
I actually started in 2016 because I was online in 2016.
Okay.
So yeah, very end of, it was probably like September on, like the end of 2016 is when I started. So like after that summer break between the other college is when I left that college and then moved to Full Sail. So then I started online and man, I wonder if I still have it. I do. Here it is. This is my original. I got all the relics up here. This is my original Full Sail computer right here.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, they're one of these old like Lenovo flip tablet computer things. This was my original. This is the original thing right here that I was doing all my classwork on.
No, that's not what you had in class with me, is it?
No. This is before I got to campus, right?
That was your machine that you were doing online stuff before. Okay, gotcha. Okay, that makes more sense. Yeah.
But I was on that little janky thing. Unlike a lot of people, I did not do a tour.
Really?
It's like a lot of people talk about like the behind the scenes tour and all this stuff, which is funny when I started working there. Maybe we'll get into it later, but like I didn't do any of that. Like I saw a couple pictures online and I was like close enough. So then I also had to coordinate to get a roommate too, all online. So like I had to hope that my roommate had it figured out when we got there, because it wasn't just me moving, it was me and Angelique were both moving to Florida at the same time. So like we had to hope that the roommate figured it out. But yeah, he did. And his mom even bought us some furniture and it was awesome.
Oh, that's good. So you used the resources to get you linked up with a roommate before you got here?
Yeah, I used the Full Sail housing guide.
Yeah. That's a really cool perk. Like, so people that don't know, Full Sail doesn't have any dorms, but they have like relationships with local nearby apartment complexes. And then they'll do this extra step of like helping to connect people so that they have that opportunity to have a roommate and cut those costs down when they get here, which is nice. Like it's like otherwise it'd be tough, you know, to do that. Was that a PlayStation cup? Look at you.
I got all the PlayStation gear. This is, shout out to my friend Montana for getting this for me. But one of my friends hooked that up. I got like all the PlayStation stuff.
Yeah. I'm all in on PlayStation, man. It's
yes, same way.
I mean, it's kind of hard not to when that's my employer, right? But
that's
I love
true.
It. I will say just a quick aside, I have been focusing on the PlayStation kind of network and infrastructure for what I play. If I can play it on my PlayStation 5, I will now. And I'm really pleased with the PlayStation 5. I really, really like that console a lot.
I finally got one.
Mm.
I got one a couple months ago. They finally had them in stock for more than like a day. Yeah. And my dad hooked it up.
Nice.
And yeah, now I have one and it is, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm really digging it. Especially if you have PlayStation Plus Premium with like this huge catalog of all the old stuff. It's awesome.
All right, so I want to get into that. What's, because I don't know anybody that has it, because like even though I am a PlayStation guy, I have Game Pass just because it goes on the computer and it's just like it's so like, but what do we got, what's on this PlayStation Unlimited or whatever it is?
So there's a few tiers of it, right? But I've got the Premium, which is the higher level tier. There's hundreds of classic stuff in there, like all the old, but not all the, I don't, a lot of the old Sony first party stuff is on there. Like Siphon Filter is on there. Like old PlayStation up through 2, 3, 4, a bunch of stuff there. And then there's a bunch of, you know, obviously PlayStation 5 stuff on there as well.
They have like original like Crash and Spyro. Yep. And do they have like the original Armored Core? I know that was a PlayStation exclusive.
Probably. I'll have to look and see.
Huh.
But that, well, now that's you got the me thing, kind of... right? Like there's, if you've got a PlayStation, I think you should get it because it like has some really, really great stuff in there.
You know, it's funny. Instead of being smart and doing that, I was at the we got like a flea market here in Raleigh, and I just bought a PS3. It was like $50, and I was like, oh, forget it. I'll just get the PS3, and now I can.
I mean, that's not a terrible way to do it either. You know, like there's a part of me that wants to like rebuy a Super Nintendo and start collecting the old cartridges again. Cause I'll get rid of so much of that stuff. Well, all of it, like it's all gone.
Expensive hobby.
It is an expensive hobby. I'm with you. I'm with you. But there's some stuff I can't find a way to play otherwise. And I don't know. I don't know. I haven't done it. I haven't done it yet. So like but it's one of those things I think about a lot.
Fair enough. Yeah. Unless you get like, unless you go through the trouble and try to get one of those emulators cracking on the computer.
Yeah, so that's a thing. I obviously as a game developer am not a fan of emulators, just as a, you know, as a basic, you know,
as a premise.
As a premise, right? But here's the thing, and I've said this before. I have not illegally downloaded or used the game since I entered the industry back in 2001, right? Before that I did it all the time, right?
Yeah,
but you know, like that was just what we did when we were growing up. But we have a problem where there's stuff that you cannot emulate, you cannot buy now, you can't play unless you have an old console, buy the old version. Like there's no way to play it other than that. So what do you do in those cases? Like,
well, especially with some games, they're just too expensive to go back and buy. Like, you want an original copy of Earthbound? Cough up $250. You know right. what I mean? Like, and especially a lot of these old like NES titles and stuff. Like, there's this game store out here, out by the mountains, kind of by where Asheville is, and like they sell like a bunch of those really old cartridges and stuff. But it's just like it's too expensive, man. Like, most of them are more than they retail for. I mean, I guess if you account for inflation, they're probably the right price, but that's just it. It's like $80-$90 for some of these things, and it's wild.
It is wild. It's tough. Like, so wait, someone's asking about the Nintendo Digital Library on their Switch. There's a lot of that stuff available on there, right? But not everything. And it's weird too, because like with so many options and consoles, and now companies are like, okay, the rights to our games will be on this thing for a while, or you can only get it on this system, and it gets really complicated.
It does, yeah. I just wish they would at least all the first party people would just take all the first party old stuff and just emulate it onto there. Because I'm like, if you can, even that little brick that I showed you right here, I mean, you can run like everything up to a Nintendo 64 on that computer.
Yeah.
So I'm like, there's no way they couldn't put an emulator into these newer consoles. Like, it doesn't have to be able to throw the disc in, but you know, like an emulator of some sort.
Right. Well, like, so here's,
it's money waiting to print itself, right?
It is, but here's the rub, and here's the thing that I think kind of makes this a little more complicated than it needs to be, is one, there's licensing agreements that have happened in the past, right? Because there's things that were like, hey, for the like, this is on this console, and that's the only thing, because at the time they weren't thinking that far ahead, right? I know there's things that like that have happened. Then there's also the bit of like, hey, and this is the thing that I hate Nintendo most for, which is, we're gonna get you just to rebuy the thing on this new console, right? Because I know you will. And that, yep, like that mentality irritates me as well.
How many times have we gotten Mario 64? How many consoles?
Right, exactly.
It's almost more times than Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, and that's it. It's infuriating, because I'm like, I want to buy a game that I love and then be able to play it wherever I want to play it ultimately. So that's where I want us to get to. But the thing you said about like taking all of your old stuff, that's what the PlayStation thing is doing right now. Every month or so, like, new stuff just starts showing up from the old consoles, and it's awesome.
Yeah, somebody just made a good point. Somebody said GTA, Chickadee said GTA 5 model, and then somebody said 15 copies of Skyrim.
Yeah, I own Skyrim on 4 platforms, I think. Like, it's just ridiculous.
No, I think I have it on at least 3. I feel like if you don't have Skyrim on 3 consoles, what are you doing, right? Yeah. Like, it's just it's the default now. It's just to own it on at least 3 systems.
Yeah, you have to. Well, I mean, 360 is where it came out, right? That's where we were.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, of course you had to get it on the Xbox One. And then you had to get, like, it's just, there's right. so many options.
Sidebar real quick. Have you beat Skyrim?
Have I beat it?
Have you beat like the, primary campaign?
I'm trying to remember if I actually finished it. I think I did on my first playthrough, but here's the thing you got to understand about me. As someone with ADHD, I will experience something and then 2 years later can experience it all new again because I've forgotten all the details.
Fair enough.
I think that I did. I'm pretty sure that I did because at the time, my ex-wife and I both were playing it so much that we had to have two copies of it and two consoles. And I'm pretty sure that I finished at least the main story at that point, like when it first launched. But I don't remember the ending, so I can't say for sure.
I don't think anybody does. I'd be pressed to see if you could find the ending on YouTube nowadays. It's like it's a mystery, right? Yeah. I got like 75% of the way through and then came back to the game 2 years later and I was messing around. I was like, no, it's time. It's time. So I just like ignored everything and just like, and I feel like it was still a slog. I feel like it was still another 20 hours after that 75% point to get to the very end. All I remember is there was a dragon and some northern lights. That's all I remember.
You know, but it's fine. I do the same thing. I tend to be someone who does a lot of side stuff and I really build it up I put a lot of effort into doing everything that I can. That's what I'm doing in God of War Ragnarok right now. I'm going wide as I go through, but then what'll happen is as I go through, I'll start to narrow. And then like, all right, I'm just beelining it toward the end of this thing. And that's how I play most things. So I get that.
Nice. I mean, there you go.
Yeah.
I think I've transitioned nowadays because like now with like a little bit less time, I'm just like, I need to beat the main campaign first. All the side stuff can wait. I need to see what happens at the end first, then I'll come back to it.
Mm.
So that's what I do now with all the new games. I'll just do whatever it takes to finish the campaign first, then I'll try to get through all the other stuff.
I should do that more.
It's hard with some of these games because once you get to that end point, the game gets weird. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, not every game allows you to go back and do the stuff that you skipped out on. So then you're like, all right, new game plus. And then now I can, hopefully there's a new game plus option anyway.
Not always.
Yeah, that is true. Not always. I think it's getting a little more common, but yeah, that's sure. A risk. I mean, you can always restart the game if you feel like you missed some stuff that you want to go experience too.
True.
So wait, where were we? we're talking about you just getting to Full Sail. And hey,
oh yeah, okay.
Don't worry about us derailing. Like it happens all the time. Totally cool. We get back on track. Let it go where it goes. It's fine.
I'm glad that you got that capability to get back to where we were, because I feel like I would just be like, I'd be over here and the original conversation would be gone. But yeah. Anyway, so I we got there and my roommate's mom picked us up from the airport. We got to the apartment. And everything mysteriously worked out when we got there. When we first got there, though, we didn't have a car or nothing. So like, I was walking to like back and forth to school, which
how
wasn't
far
that far.
Was it?
I don't know, maybe,
how long did it take you? You know, was it like a 20
how long
minute
did it
walk?
Take me?
Yeah,
probably about 20 minutes. Yeah, I think so it was about a mile or a little less.
Yeah.
That was probably the furthest I've lived from campus for the first place I had. The other place had shortcuts and stuff. But yeah, it was about that far. And luckily, when I got to Florida, it was January, so
that's
I had
the
some
right
time
weather.
To adapt.
Yeah.
Because if it was right away with the... But the things I wasn't used to, like, I didn't expect it to just, like, rain out of nowhere. Like, it'd be perfectly sunny, and then, you know, thunder, lightning, things that, like, are very uncommon. Where I'm from, it's just like, it was a whole nother world getting to Florida.
Yeah. And that's, you did come at a good time. I started in October of 1999. How old were you in 1999? Were you alive yet?
Oh, like, I was born in 96.
Okay. but
October's
a good time.
Do I remember much of 99?
Yeah.
But you know, like.
I don't remember much of 99 myself, but, coming in the fall, winter is the right time to be here because come what, like June, it starts to get pretty unbearable here. Mm-hmm. I want to stay inside all the time.
Yeah, you're telling me, because I'm like, there's nothing I hate more than like rain. It's just like, I remember the first time I was outside when it rained, and I was like, why is it hot?
Yeah, it is hot rain here. That's a...
Like, the rain was hitting my skin. I was like, is it acid? What's going on here? And I think I was wearing a white t-shirt at the time, too. And it's like, why is my shirt turning yellow? What's wrong with this place?
Wait, were you in Castleberry? Like, it's a... the water there is wild.
It must have been, man, because that was... my t-shirt was turning yellow from the rain. I was like, this place is wild, man.
Oh, man. That sounds like
I've had some Florida... I've had some crazy Florida experiences, though, while I was there. But yeah, and then we're back to it. So I got there first day on campus, and it was, I don't know, man, it was awesome. It was kind of like the movies.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't know too much about Full Sail going in. And like I said, I didn't do a tour. I didn't do any of that stuff. So it was all like brand new and fresh to me.
And so orientation, was that your first kind of on-campus experience, or did you?
Oh yeah.
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 And that's, like, that's nice. Yeah.
Cause like cause I didn't have a whole lot of time to really do anything like, beforehand. It was just like, I was in Alaska. I did my going away party. I had to pack up all my stuff out of my apartment, find somebody to take over my lease. And then, you know, put as much stuff as I could in a suitcase and leave. And then, you know, I had like, I think I'd maybe leave on a Friday. You get there. Like a Saturday. No, maybe I left on a Saturday and then got to Florida on a Sunday, and then school was like the next day.
Yeah.
So it was just like immediately, didn't even get to look at campus first. It was straight in.
Every move I've ever made has been that way. I get there and then immediately have to start my new job or do whatever I got to do.
Exactly. That's just how it goes. You get there and it's immediately, you don't even get a second to like breathe. You gotta just go. You gotta start running as soon as you hit the ground.
Yeah. That's the way we like it, though, right? Like, I want to do the thing. I'm not here to mess around. Let's do it. Go.
Exactly. And you know, I was here to make games. So I was like, let's get it done, man.
Yeah. So, all right. One other side question. I've got a shot to take. You taking shots tonight? Or am I?
Again, I'm just going to, I put a lot of alcohol in this.
Oh, nice. So
I'm going to take a big gulp.
All right. That's cool.
Cause I was irresponsible with my alcohol over the weekend. So like I had to pour what was left. I was like, there's not really enough to do like a, I don't know how many shots we're going to do. So we're just going to pour it in here, mix it with some bubbly or something. And we'll drink that way.
I think we're going to end up with about five overall. I've taken two. Here's number three. We're going to do this.
There's probably about four in here. I'm a little smaller. So like maybe it'll hit me the same.
Nice. Cheers, buddy.
Yeah, cheers.
All right.
Yeah, Chickadee down there drank all my alcohol up.
Oh, yeah? All right. I've got one more shot waiting, and I think there's one more available for chat, so we'll see how it goes. Okay. So you started, you had your first kind of on-campus wow experience, and for those that aren't familiar with Full Sail, it's an entertainment-focused school. So there's like digital media, there's gaming, there's film, there's show production, there's audio engineering. Like it's all like all these things that you're like that we consume as people as entertainment. They teach people how to do it and like how to be a part of that. And like before I got there, or started thinking about there, I never really thought about who made movies, who made games, who made these things that, you know, concerts and things that I experienced. When I got there and saw the behind the scenes of all of it, I was just like, oh, like this is like really, there's a ton of technical and creative positions across all of these, you know, industries. And there's a lot of similarities between them.
There is, man. It's just, man, it's wild. Like when you get there and you see it, you know?
Yeah, and that was the thing as well for me, because like I was in classes with people in these other degrees, so I got to see the excitement of someone that cared about film and that cared about, you know, mixing their first album or, you know, all that kind of stuff, and it was just infectious. Like the vibe was really good.
Those first, well, actually, because I did most of it online, so I think I only had one class that actually had everybody in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was math, but also it had, I think most of the people I started the game design program with. I don't think it had all of them, but I think it had most of them were in that first class.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure that's where I met like Lionel and the the rest of the main characters.
Nice. Yeah, your group that went through was one of the more memorable ones for me. We'll get to that, but that was that was a fun group for sure.
Oh man, yeah, it was.
It's funny for me because like I was only teaching that class. I only taught that class for like I think 6 or 7 months. And
that's where we came in.
It is. But like out of those classes, I have lifelong friends. Like there's people from every one of those classes that I still talk to. And that's a really interesting thing to me, you know, that like you can make those kind of connections in just a month.
No, it's like, it's crazy, but I feel like after, at least, you know, like with some of us, even when the class is over, we're still barging into your room.
That's
we're
true
still too. Interrupting you.
That's true.
We're still running into you. We're still like asking questions. We're finding you. We're hunting you down. Like, that's just how it went. Like,
if you're doing it right,
you're a cool teacher.
Yeah. Yeah. If your student doing it right, that's what you're doing. Yeah. No, and that totally makes sense. I agree. But it's just such an intense time. Like each class is a month and 40 hours a week you're with your instructor. Like that is a lot of time to get to know somebody too.
It is. I mean, like when I'm telling people about like what we went through there in the trenches at Full Sail.
Yeah.
They're like, what? Classes for how long? At what time?
Yep.
And yeah. I'm like, that's just how it was, man. It's just like 40 plus hours a week and then homework and then, you know, and then it was maybe it was 1 a.m. Maybe it was 3 a.m. Who knows?
Yeah. It's wild because it's just such an intense time. It's a minimum workout. It's a minimum work week, right? Like your baseline time is a full-time job of education. So it's pretty intense, but I think it's incredible. I think what you come out understanding about what it's like to really work in entertainment is invaluable.
Oh, for real.
And to be clear, like, this is not a Full Sail stream, right? Like this is just my opinion about, you know, my experience with it. So
no, I feel it, man.
So you're there, you're getting started, you meet up with your group. What was your first like game design classes like? As you're now like oh, I'm starting to learn what it's like to actually do the thing that I'm going to do. What was that kind of eye-opening experience like for you?
I think like the first one where I was really like, you know, like it was probably the Gallows class.
Yeah.
I wish I remembered the exact name of Gallows class.
That was PMP1, wasn't it? Was it first project, portfolio project? I'm trying to remember.
It must have been project and portfolio one. Or maybe, yeah, no, because that was the first one, because I think before that is where the one where we made like a scene from a game, but like this one we had to actually get in there and make something. And he really liked the little game I did. Was a game based off of a comic book I did as a kid.
Yeah.
And I was able to make the little characters for those in there that know the Adventures of Pete and Toby. Some of you in there know what it's all about.
Wait, so you already had source material you were working with.
Okay. Yeah, like I had it all written out. Like I had two playable characters. It was wild. It was little like 3D platformer penguin and a turtle. It was awesome, man.
I love it.
It was actually what I really wanted to do for like the final project later on, but it was like when we went into final project, it was right when they removed the ability to use, right when they took out the part where you could use the games that you pitched in the previous class.
Mm. That's a bummer.
Yeah, but I mean, that was just like the first, I mean, there were so many, like there were so many cool projects that we did. There was that one. There was the infamous Scraps.
Oh, we're going to talk about Scraps.
We'll come back to Scraps.
Yeah.
And then there was, there was Brian's class where we made the spiritual successor to Armored Core, Boost Talks, for anybody that knows about it.
Oh, man, this is going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a bunch of deep references that only a couple people in here get. But
we'll add some context because there's... Yeah. Like it's interesting because like for those that don't know, one of the things that you do throughout your time in a Full Sail degree is you have seven portfolio projects, which is where you, when you hit one of them, it's like you kind of utilize everything you've learned up to that point to make a project that you can then put in your portfolio to show, here's what I've learned so far, but then to give you something to show potential employers. And the class that I taught was the third portfolio project. And by that time, it was the first time I think that people, like, all the knowledge kind of came together to like, oh, I can build this thing. And then now I've got to work with others. And it's like, how do we build this thing together? And I think it's a really, really valuable kind of learning experience. I think a lot of kind of things clicked for people at that point.
Oh yeah, for sure. Man, are we getting into that part? Are we starting
now
with your class?
No, we'll jump back. I just wanted to make sure that people kind of understood kind of what that, you know, that overall flow is like. Cause it's by the end, it's, you know, multiple month capstone project seven thing that's like a full game with the whole like the whole development process, but along the way you're like learning each piece, you know, and kind of getting yourself prepared for that. Just kind of give some context of what it's like.
That class was a couple months long, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's hard to like, you know, figure out what was short. The one right in the middle where it was just like it was 3 months long. That was wild. We'll get into it, though. We'll get into it later.
That's right. So you're with your class. You're doing your first stuff. You've got your project there with your, you know, something that you're excited about. And I like that you had some kind of source material for yourself that allowed you to of like get excited about. And because I think, or at least I personally learn new things better when I have an idea of what I want to create or what it is that I'm trying to do. And I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, I think it helps. Like if you have like, you know, you don't want anything like too outrageous or anything, but if you have like a simple idea, maybe just some characters or something, you know, just something to grab onto, it kind of gives you that push that you need to kind of get it done. You got this very specific vision in here that you need to see it on the screen, you know?
Well, I think it also has a different effect for some people too, because I think a lot of people that come into game design are thinking already that they're going to be a creative director, right? So they've got big vision, they've got this whole thing planned out, and it's usually a lot of narrative and a lot of, you know, there's very little in the way of like, what do you do moment to moment? And what game development really is what are you doing with a controller in your hand, you know, second to second? That's kind of how the degree, you know, pushes you through, right? Where it's like, how do you prototype simple mechanics? How do you prototype putting those two things together into something that's fun? And I think that first moment where you're like, hey, come make something. And if you have a thought in your head, you realize, oh, this is such a small part of that overall grand vision, but it is like the foundation of what it is that this game is actually going to be.
Yeah. And then, yeah, like I said, it was, it worked out for me. And it like the game kind of became like its own, it became its own joke throughout the rest of like my time there. Like every game after that had to have some kind of reference to it. Even sometimes I wouldn't even make the reference. Somebody would just throw the reference in there. It just became like a running joke.
Nice.
It's like, I love it. It lives on forever. That's all I ever wanted.
Ah, I love it. That stuff's fun. So what was your first group project? And do you remember who was in your group?
Oh man. Cause I'm like trying to remember what were solo projects and what was Brian's class after your class or before your class?
After.
That was after your class. Cause I feel like I remember all the group projects taking place after your class, or at least like the ones that are,
I believe that's true. I think my project was your first group project. And
a great transition.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't think about that until you said that. So when you get to my class, it's the class before it is level design. And what everyone has done at that point is they've made their own level in Scraps. And what Scraps was essentially a toolkit and world that we gave people that like gave them some boundaries to work within and some simple mechanics and things like that. And they're like, hey, go make something that uses this baseline objective and, you know, and canon and all of this stuff to kind of make a small level that someone can experience. Then when you jump into the class that I taught, we would pair people together and say, okay, you all have this level you built last month. how do you take these and combine them into one long experience that's cohesive and something that makes sense from start to finish? How do you alter that? How do you focus that so that it makes that looks like it's kind of a bigger experience for the player?
Man, I remember, like, I can't remember if I was just wasn't paying attention or if it wasn't, like, clear to me at the time, but, like, I didn't go into the next class expecting having to put it together with other people's stuff. Mm-hmm. So, like, my level was, like, it was, like, skyscrapers, and, like, nobody else had anything like that, I don't think. So, like, I had this, like, this big skyscraper, and it was, like, obviously, like, you know, you're jumping on cranes and all this stuff. So, like, we had to figure out, when we first got in the groups, like, trying to figure out how do we, like, make this make any type of sense. I think we ended up having to change, like, quite a few things to, like, I was like, we got to make it consistent somehow. And somehow we just, because I was willing to change mine to whatever would make sense, but I think we ended up just going with the city anyways,
mm-hmm.
like the destroyed city. And it somehow worked out, because I think it starts on these rooftops, then you go into this office building, and then I think it's some parkour or something, you drop down, and you're on the streets, and then there's a couple other buildings. I think you end up in the subway system at some point. And
Do you remember who all was in your group?
Man, I wish I did.
At least you remember some of the people in your group.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Riley was in my group.
Okay, I thought so, too.
And Rob was in my group. I'm going to say, I don't think Lionel was in my group. Lionel, if you're here, were you in my group? I can't. Now I feel bad if he was in my group and I didn't remember he was in my group at the time.
Dude, like that happens to me all the time. Like, don't worry about that. But here's the thing. I remember Riley being in your group, and I'm glad you said that, because when I saw what you guys were trying to do, my first impression was there's no way that they're going to get this stuff done. Right? Like, there's no way. And most of that is because at that point, everybody's eyes are way bigger than their stomach, right? Like, there's this grand vision of what they think they can accomplish in a month. And at that point, I've been teaching the class for a few months, and I'd seen what people were generally actually capable of producing. And when I saw it, I was like, there's no way this is gonna happen. You guys absolutely surprised me. And that was the moment that I knew, specifically you and Riley, were capable of really good things, because your sections of the level and the things that happen down there, I was like, this, like, the amount of work put into this and the amount of skill put into this was very impressive to me at that time based on what I'd seen already. And it it tilted the scale for me a bit and made me reevaluate, like, okay, I've got to understand also as an instructor that some people are going to have a higher level of skill and a higher level of dedication, and they're going to work well together. So it became one of those, like, upper tier projects for me, where I was like, okay, this is kind of a new standard of what, you know, I can anticipate a good group being able to do.
Yeah. And, like, it helped out later, because Riley was one of the ones I did the final project with too. Like, we worked really well together. Like, you know, he had all the mechanics down, right? And I had the way to, like, put it all into something that was cohesive enough to make sense. So, like, he made it all, like, you know, all the really cool stuff you could do, and then I had to figure out how to make it work with the rest of the stuff. And we actually ended up using mechanics from his stuff, like, all throughout, like, the entire thing. Oh, you know who else was in my thing? I think Leto was also in it.
Yep, you're right.
Every once in a while, like, another one's just going to come into the head.
Yep.
How many people were supposed to be in a group? Was it four?
It was around
more?
Four or five, I believe.
If it was four, I think that was the four right there. Would be me, Rob, Riley, and Leto.
You might have had a fifth.
I think there was a fifth. Then I'm like, I'm forgetting. I'm feeling bad about it. But there was a...
Because there was someone was that had a tremendous amount of geometry in the level. And I was just like, this is way too much. Like there's so much stuff here, but it ended up working. And I couldn't believe the level of, like, work that happened on it every week as we went through that.
I remember Rob's part of the level had, like, a lot going on, but it was his part of the level was super cool, but there was, like, a lot happening. We had to go in and, like, I think there was, like, some invisible collision in a couple places. But we got it figured out, and like his area was a super cool addition at the very end, because I think it was Leto that had the underground train part, yep. And I think Rob had like a
maybe it was
like a research facility or something.
Yep,
I don't know. It was something at the end, but it was cool. It all worked out.
Yeah, that underground, like I was nervous about that because it was a big area and it was complicated. But in the end, like you guys really surprised me, and that honestly, that was a thing where I was like, okay, it kind of reset my, you know, my standards on what I can expect out of a good group, but also just
we had what to figure out a way to go awesome. From the skyscraper down into these tunnels.
Yeah. And to me, that thought process and that exercise is really important because it shows you how differently people can perceive and think about achieving the same goal, right? Because you coming out of the level design, you had the same objective and you all tackled it very differently, right? Like you had different things you wanted to do. And so when you bring all that stuff together and you've got to make something cohesive, you've now as an individual have to decide, is the way that I accomplish this better for what we're now trying to do as a group, or is what someone else did better? And should we move what I did across everyone's levels, or should we take what someone else did and move it across mine? And that's a humbling experience, right? Like that's something that to me that talks about what real game development is really like, is those kind of push and pulls and finding the right compromise.
Yeah. Now that I think I know how we did it now. I'm like trying to think about it. I think we reworked Riley's level because I think his level went from down to up. I think we reworked it to go from up to down to get you lower to get to the next, I think that's what it was, but I just thought about it real quick. I'm like, that's how we did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was an awesome experience being in your class, man. Crazy.
Why was it crazy? Like what do you remember about the class? I'm curious. Or do you,
man, remember? I remember. Well, you know, I'm glad you asked, right? No, I just remember just trying to get the, I remember loving building the level, but then like trying to figure out how to, like, you know, be up at night trying to figure out how does it all gonna fit together, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pulling out sketchbooks and like just trying to figure out like how do we do it. I just remember a lot of like not doing a whole lot and just a lot of talking, you know what I mean?
Well, trying to that's the thing that I actually wanna bring up, that was the moment that you stood out to me as a student and as someone that I saw that could potentially be really good at this, because you were always at my desk, right? You were constantly asking me questions, looking for feedback, talking to me about what was working well, what wasn't. Like that stuff is really important, because that dialogue and the constant looking for a way to get better at what you're doing, I think is the kind of stuff that really propels you, because it would propel anyone, because it's so important, right? Like we've always got to be looking to get better, but also how to be empathetic, how to, whenever someone asks me, hey, how do I get my team to collaborate better? How do I get us to stop butting heads? Those are really important questions. And that's the kind of stuff that matters most when we're working on bigger games with lots of people. You've got to be able to collaborate. You've got to understand what someone else wants and how it like melds with what you want.
For real. You know, it's funny. I thought it was difficult when I was at Full Sail, you know, working with people sometimes, because like people have their own vision, but then like you realize that you're mostly working with other designers. Now I remember the first time I did a game jam, that's where the real difficulty begins, trying to like work with like people from all disciplines at the same time. Lionel knows, he was there. The first game jam we ever did, the game worked out, but it was wild trying to get all those people like wrangled up, trying to get something cohesive going.
And that's the thing that's interesting is, you know, each we would put people into a group and say, go do this thing. There was no leader assigned, right? Like it was just like, hey, and it was we let you pick your groups in that one, I believe. So you had the opportunity to do that. And then
figure it all together. Final project was random.
Yeah. But still, like, just seeing how people work together and, you know, who kind of stood up as like the voice of the group is really important, because not everybody's a leader, and that's okay, right? And if you become the person that is the leader and people listen to you, like Camaro's saying in the chat, a leader is not appointed, it's earned. And in this case, that is 100% true. That's not always true in the industry, right? Like you're going to get a job, you're going to have your lead. That's the person that you respond to and that you're beholden to. But natural leadership permeates throughout whatever role you're in, right? And if you have that, it's super valuable. And the people that respect you and value that leadership are going to, you're going to come together to make something great, because you're all getting on the same page together.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I feel like I got like a natural second in command. That's like my thing.
Yeah.
I just naturally end up falling into the second in command place. That's where I do my work.
Why do you think that is?
And
the only reason I ask that is because that has traditionally been the same for me in a lot of cases too.
You know, I don't know. Maybe it's just where I'm like the most comfortable being there, like second in command, because like, you know, I can advise the person that's in command. We can collaborate a little bit, but like, it's, I don't know. For me, it's like tough being at the top, because then like, who do you go to? You're at the top. You know what I mean? Like that's difficult. Like I feel like I like being second in command, because you can go to this person, you can go to those people, you can be the mediator, you can, you know.
That's really interesting to me, because in a lot of cases I feel the same way, which is, a lot of us have a lot to offer, right? Like we have a lot of experience, and we might even have the right answer a lot of the time, but being the person, right? Like the person who is going to take the fall if it fails is very stressful, right? Like that is not a fun thing to think about. And I've been in that position. I was a creative director, you know, for several years, and the everyone coming to me for the answers is not always the best and funnest thing, right? Like being one level down, where you still have that same level of autonomy and ability to impact a project, but not being the one everybody points fingers at. There's something to be said for that.
Exactly. And I'm like, I like being able to choose to be the fall guy need to. Like that's where I come in. I can be the hero. But if you're at the top, then it's kind of tough to do that. It's funny that we're talking about this, because like at my job right now, that's kind of what's happened to me recently. As I was leading with one other person, but like over like the holiday break, they're like, well, now it's just you. And I'm like,
So you had like like someone who was at the same level, and they're not there now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and he had been there for a while, and we were both leading the team at the same time. But now it's just me. So now I gotta.
That's
gotta pick up the, you know, I gotta take over now.
There's a lot we can talk about there.
Yeah, I bet we can.
So here's the thing that's interesting. We already only have like 45 minutes left. So
oh wow,
almost certainly you're gonna have to come back on, because I feel like we're gonna get through Full Sail, and then we're gonna have you come back to talk about everything post Full Sail. So, but yeah, I love that though. We need to make a note of that and make sure that we talk about that, because shared leadership is a really great thing. Having a true equal to bounce ideas off of, especially if you have kind of complementary styles and personalities, that can be really, really good. And if you have that, and then that is taken from you, and you are now by yourself, and you don't have that person to, you know, bounce ideas off of and share the, you know, the load and the potentially blame, or, you know, but also glory of whatever comes out of something, like that's tough. That can be difficult to deal with.
Man. Yeah, no, it is. 'Cause it's just like, because we were both handling different things too. Like I handled like the testers directly, pretty much. Like, you know, I was communicating with them directly. I would tell them all the stuff that they needed to know. Like I was, and then the other tester would do a lot of the like back end stuff. So like,
yeah,
now it's all here. So like, yeah, maybe I'll have to talk to you about that, since you know what it's like.
Hey, you can always talk to me, man. Like I'm always available. And you know,
I'm taking it. Yeah, I'm gonna wait. Yeah. I'm gonna do the cheers.
I got another shot here to take. But I do want to say, like, one of the main reasons that I do this stream, this podcast, is because I realized at my time at Full Sail how much I enjoyed mentoring. And I've been doing this for 22 years, right? Like, I have a lot of experience, right? It's not always applicable to whatever anyone is going through, but I enjoy sharing that. And I enjoy helping people, you know, get through whatever it is that they're going through, because I have a lot of empathy for that because I went through it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so one of the reasons I do this is so I can do this on a much broader scale, you know, and just be like, these conversations, I hope, will help people when they're out experiencing this themselves to know, hey, here's a way I could approach this, or here's something I hadn't thought about when I'm, you know, now faced with X scenario. But in addition to that, you, as someone that I know and have a friendship with, dude, always feel free to reach out to me, man. If you're dealing with something, or if you, you know, are, you know, even just thinking through, like, how do I handle something? If nothing else, I can be an ear. So don't worry about that. Always feel free to reach out.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it.
But that said, I'm going to take another shot. This is my fourth.
Oh, let's get it. So, let's get it.
Cheers.
Cheers. Oh, no, my camera's over here. There we go. I'm looking at the wrong camera.
That's when you know you're doing it. When you have multiple cameras.
Yeah, I know. You can't really see what's going on, but there's four monitors right now. None of them are on, but there is four. In fact, there's a fifth one in that corner over there too. I got too many TVs here. I just be finding these things. Like, I be going out by the dumpster sometimes, and there's just like a free monitor. I'm like, shh. I mean, all it needs is a cord.
Dude, I made the best upgrade for my workstation ever. I have a 34 widescreen in front of me, and I have a 27 portrait to the left, right? Then I added a 55 HD TV right above it on the wall.
Oh.
And so it's like, I'm just got screens for days, and it is awesome. So during my work day, I have like my editor and all the side windows and stuff that I need are over here on the side screen. And I've got Slack up in the corner. And then up top, I either have email and Discord or the game. And so, like, I'm just surrounded by all the things that I need, and it is awesome.
Are you the kind of person like me where it's just like it's never enough monitors? Feel like you could always. That's how I am. I'm like, no matter how many monitors I have, I feel like if I just had one more monitor, I could get this one thing right here.
I want, like, another one right here. Like, I want another one on this side, another portrait one, so I'm fully surrounded.
That's what I'm saying. Angelique be looking at me like I'm crazy, but I'm like, yo, come on. I'm like, if I can just have what, because I need the game over here, but I need Slack here, and I need my email there, and like, if a video pops up, I need it here so I can look at this and that at the same time. Like, that's just how it. I love it though. I love having all the monitors.
Yeah,
I can't,
man,
go back. It's trying to do something on one monitor. I can't. It's like I can't. I'm like fighting the computer. I can't do it.
Oh man, I. Every time I look at my phone and I'm like, I need to do anything that's actually productive, I set it down and I come in here because it's like,
I'm the same way.
Can't do it.
I can't even pay my bills on my phone. I'm like, exactly. No, I need to do it on the computer. I need to, like,
100%.
You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely. I feel that at a level you don't even know. Like,
oh, man.
Oh.
Yeah, for real, man. I'm like, I need all of it. Even now, like, if I'm in, like working on like a project or something in Unreal, I started doing this thing now where it's just like the project is its own window, and like I remove all of the sidebars, everything, and like I learned that you can just pull everything off of Unreal and just have the screen with nothing on it, and then just put everything in other places. I'm like, oh, dude, this is what we should have been doing the whole. We're cavemen,
dude. That is what I've been doing ever since I entered the industry. I have one screen in front of me that it is just the 3D view.
That's it.
And the outliner. I put the outliner on the right side. That's it.
Okay.
Everything else is on my other screen. So, like, you know, a world map view and or anything else is on another screen. So it's like almost all just 3D view. I need it.
That's what I'm saying. Then you get your content browser and you can have your little tabs and you can you can quickly find the items you need and you can drag them from one screen to the other screen. I'm like, this is. I can't believe we were trying to fit all this stuff on one screen. You know what I mean?
Dude, I, oh man, I, I haven't had a single screen since 2003, I think.
Oh, wow. That's, okay, that's a lot longer than I was roughing it probably up until I started working from home is like when I finally started doing the double monitor thing. And then it became a triple monitor thing when they provided me one, and then I asked for another one, and then
I get it, man. Screen space, like, you'll always utilize it. Like, you will find something to go.
There's always, if it's just my sticky notes, it's going over there. You know, there's always something happening. There's never a blank monitor.
Dude, speaking of that, another thing that I bought that has super helped me, like, in this setup for pre-production or from, like, just kind of tracking things, is a rolling whiteboard. I have this whiteboard that I roll in and I put right here when I'm working. And I get sticky notes and I just like set it all over it. And it's like my big brainstorming space that I can then roll out of the room when I don't need it. It's out in my garage right now because I don't need it. But as soon as I enter pre-pro on something, I roll that thing back in. And then now I've got everything that I need on it. It's like I'll sit here and work on things. I'm like, oh, I need to think about that. And I would just turn around, write a note, stick it under the thing that it should go under. And I don't need to worry about that right now. I'll get back to that. Like,
ooh.
It's nice. It's really nice.
The last job I had when I was actually working in an office, I was not a whiteboard, but I definitely had like sticky notes and stuff because like my desk was like, man, it was like comedically big. It was ridiculous. I'm like, I don't know why any person would need a desk this big. Like, it was so big, you'd have to roll your chair over to get to the other side of your desk. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And they were like single person desks, but they were just like huge. But yeah, I was just like filling it with sticky notes and like, It was crazy.
It's good times.
Where were we anyways? I don't even remember.
We were talking about my class. Something
about scraps, maybe.
No, we were talking about my class. Yeah, for real. And so first group project was my class.
Right.
And then as you leave there becomes a lot more of that, right? Because that class was halfway point of your degree. And then I feel like the rest of it is mostly group projects because that's what the industry is like. And that's what's trying to be emulated.
I think it's
right?
I want to say it's like probably all group projects maybe there's one or two that weren't, but yeah, I felt like it was all group projects after that. It was just one after another. I think the next major one after that for me would have been probably Brian's class.
Yeah. That
working with Riley once again.
Huh.
I feel like every group project I've been on, I'm always working with Riley. It's just how it is.
I mean, you could have a worse partner. I'm just saying, but.
Could. But it didn't, so.
But Lionel was in your class too, right?
Yeah, which is funny, because I'm like, man, did me and Lionel ever actually... No, we did have... Okay, so we did have projects together, but every time we did have a project together, it wasn't like... It wasn't a game project. So it'd be like... I can't remember all the other specific ones, like the one where we had to make like a game pitch, maybe. When was Brent's class? Was his name Brent?
Yeah. Well, that was building functional groups, right? And that was building all about
functional groups.
All about group work.
Now, was that after your class then? Building functional groups?
I think it was.
I think it was, but I feel like, man, it would have made more sense maybe to put it anyways.
I might have to look that up now.
Yeah, like I definitely had that one with Lionel. Man, I remember we barely made it. We struggled. We struggled on that one.
Really?
What? Yeah, I don't know what it was about that one, but yeah, we struggled. That was the time I almost got hit by lightning too. It was during that class.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I know, right?
What? I'm gonna need a little more information on that.
So like, we were studying at my house, and you know how Florida is. It'd be raining. Randomly at like 3 a.m. or 3 p.m. And it was raining and everybody was there but Lionel. We were waiting for Lionel to come inside. But, you know, it was raining, so I was just like, I'll go get him. I was like, it ain't raining that bad. It was raining bad, but, you know. I'm like, come on, you're from Puerto Rico. You're used to the rain. Come on, right? So, like, I get out there and I'm walking over to him and it's pouring down rain. There's kind of like an overhang with the apartment, and I see his car. He's parked like right there. He's like 10 feet away from me. So I'm just like, I'm walking over to his car, And like, I took that first step out from the overhang, and it was like he thought I died, because from where he was sitting, the lightning bolt hit right between me and his car. And his car's only about, his car's only like 10 feet from me. So that means the lightning bolt's only about it's only about 5 feet away. It was what? Like, I couldn't, it hit so close, it knocked me over. There was like a shockwave from it.
Did like, you like I couldn't shit see. Yourself or like what? Like what's the...
No, I thought I thought I died because
I believe it.
It was this loud, it was just like white flash. And then like, I couldn't see or hear anything. And like, I was like laying on the ground, like rolling around. And Lionel, he gets out of his car and he runs through and he like goes to check on me because he thought I died. Because from his perspective, it looked like I just got hit. And then he goes over and like picks me up. And like, I just like shook it off. I was like, all right, let's get this project done.
Wow.
We moved on so quick, but like, yeah, that's what it was. He lightning bolt came down. I was like, I'm never doing that again.
I don't know how to respond to that story. That is wild.
Yeah, next time I come on, I'll tell you about the one with the flooding Jeep and the alligator, but we'll get there later.
Man. Cause right now we're just talking about like your halfway point, right?
Yeah, that was only halfway through Tulsa when the lightning bolt hit, so you know, awakening moment.
How did I never hear about that? Like I know you and Lionel very well, so I thought one of you
tell
me that.
It was one of those every once in a while it comes up in conversation, like when it's light, I'm like, man, I remember that time I almost got hit by lightning, but like,
so wait, where was it? Where were you?
This was at my apartment. This was like down the street from Tulsa over off of is it Goldenrod? No. It's like there's an apartment complex kind of behind that, you know, that Target that's right by Full Sail?
Yeah, that's near Goldenrod.
Yeah, okay. There's like an apartment complex like right past Target.
Yep.
And it was right there. I was in that apartment complex. There was like an overhang. I was walking out to get Lionel and just...
Dude, that is wild. That is absolutely wild.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. Hey,
glad you didn't die, you know, like...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I was like, whoa. I was like, we're almost late on this project, though. We got to get back to it. I remember just, like, moving on from it so quick. Like, Lionel was concerned.
He threw some
like,
dirt on
nobody
it.
Nobody inside knew what happened, either. As far as they knew, lightning just hit real close to the house. Because there were, like, six other people in the apartment for, like, the project. But, yeah, I just, like, shook it off, and, like, we walked back in. Kept it moving.
That's just absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Every time I see lightning now, I'm like, no, I'm done. I can't be near it anymore after that.
That, I mean, everyone should already feel that way, and I 100% understand why you feel that way.
Yeah. But we survived, and we made it. We had more full sailing to do, so.
Yeah. So
I think the halfway point, I think that's when I started working while I was there, too.
Okay. That's actually an interesting thing to talk about, because, you know, a lot of people that move, especially to Full Sail for education, it's not cheap, right? And living expenses here are not cheap. So a lot of people do try to find a way to make some income while they're here. There are a lot of opportunities at Full Sail for, you know, part-time employment while you're here. So what did you do to do that?
That's exactly what I did. I got part-time employment at Full Sail. I'm pretty sure Lionel was the one that got the job first. It was the SCA.
Mm.
The Student Community Association, I think, was the name. I could be missing a letter in the acronym there, but... yeah, so Lionel, I think, started working there, and then, you know, we were friends. He hit me up and asked, hey, do you want a job working here for this? I was like, oh, heck yeah, man. So I started working with him doing that, and we did all the, what do you call it? What's the thing that takes place after BTS? Like the block party?
Are you talking about, like, the moment where people get to, like, talk with the different departments?
Event.
Oh, the networking event. Yeah.
Yeah, so we did the networking events, and I was the, what's the word used for that? I was the guy that would get up on stage and, like, get the people, like, jumping and all that stuff. So that was kind of
I don't think we actually touched on this. Behind the scenes is something that Full Sail does. So if you're interested in a degree, you can come down and you can like experience what it's like to be on campus and to be part of a degree. And then you get to jump in and see a little bit of what that specific degree is like to see like, oh, is this really what I want or not? And then the end of the day, you get to like, you know, talk to housing and financial aid and kind of figure out, is this something, you know, that makes sense for me? And in this case, it sounds like you were part of that whole experience that happens once a month to help people, you know, kind of understand, is this a place they want to be?
Yeah. And, which is funny because I didn't actually do my first behind the scenes tour until like, it's like 6 months after I graduated. It was the first time I ever did like a full behind the scenes tour.
Oh, wow.
So like after I graduated, when I was working for Full Sail, that's when I actually did one of those events. Or actually, I got to go on the behind the scenes because like I'd never done it. So my boss hooked it up and I was able to do it because I'd never done it. So I was like, what is it? What do you do? Where do you go? Yeah, but yeah, that's what I did for them. And then they did all sorts of other student community focused events. So like most of the events that were on, most if not all the events that took place on campus, except for like the really big ones like Hall of Fame, that was like the Student Community Association. So we put on all those events you'd be seeing. We did like the open mic night, karaoke night, the networking event. We had other networking events that we would do outside of that networking event. I don't even remember all the stuff we did, but yeah, that's what we would do, send emails and do that. And that was my job that I had while I was there.
Well, I want to take a minute to talk about your extracurricular activities, because I think you, like I mentioned earlier, you're someone who did a really good job of finding opportunities to network, make yourself known, you know, get involved, all of those things. So what kind of things were you involved in outside of just, you know, the work that you were doing there? Because you ran for president of the student association, right?
Oh, shoot. Yeah. I mean, I totally forgot that was even a thing, man. It's all like, it's all such a blur. I think, man, I want to say, I think Lionel was the one that ended, because I think it was between me and him, but I think he might've gotten, I don't know, he can confirm what it was, but yeah, man, there was so much going on with that, but where it really kicked off, I can't remember how exactly I got involved with the group, but there was Indianomicon. I think Lionel may have touched on it when he was here.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically like the indie dev scene for Orlando. So at some point in the timeline, I got involved with those guys, and they would do like, it must have been at some point after I turned 21, so it's probably like 2018. So yeah, this is like my final couple months of Full Sail when I got involved with these guys. And through them, though, I was able to, that's when we did the first game jam I ever did with Lionel. It was through these guys. And then I really hit it off with these guys, and we started like hanging out just regularly. Like every time I'd go out downtown Orlando, I was with that group of game devs, and they did this really cool thing. It was like the game dev pub crawl once a month. It had a much cooler name than that, but we're going to roll with that for now. So at one Thursday every month, we would all get together, and like the cool thing was their office space, where they had like a bunch of indie studios housed inside of it, was just like a 10-minute walk from downtown Orlando. So like everybody would just park there, and then we'd all go walk over to the bars, and like that's how I really got to know all these guys.
Game dev drink up. That was it.
Game dev drink up. Yep. That's what it was.
Yep.
And then like, because I think it didn't go as late as we were usually there, but like I think it went into like, maybe it started like 8, went to like 10 maybe. But then I was always there until 2 or 3 in the morning with those guys. Like, we'd gather whoever wanted to stay late, and we'd just go from place to place to place. And like I said, we really, really hit it off from there.
Interesting. So what do you think was the value out of those kind of networking and kind of getting to know people scenarios?
The value is like, if, I mean, the important people skills, you know what I mean? Like, you go to these things, and a lot of times you meet those people that don't have those people skills, right? So sometimes you can, like, mentor those people, kind of show them, you know, how to act in situations like this. But, what's the word I'm looking for here? I don't know, just, like, getting to meet these people, and, like, those people would, like, if an opportunity would come up, these people be the first people to let you know if there was a game jam or something that was coming up. They would think of you first. Like, they would just, like, you know, sometimes they just hit you up to hang out, and that's what you do. You just hang out, and you make friends, and, like, from friends comes opportunity sometimes. They, like, you know,
yeah,
they're, no, like, oh, this guy's really good at this one thing, because they know what you do as well. Like, it's the same group of people that are at all the game jams with you, right? Not only they know you're a cool guy to hang out with, right, but they know what you can do. They've seen it.
Yeah.
Also, so, like, that was, like, the real value of it. People that knew you on a deeper level like that, not only, like, your personality, but your skills as well. So, like,
I look forward to talking about how that translated into the industry, and, like,
oh, yeah.
And, like, we're not going to touch on that tonight, because we're not going to get past your time at Full Sail tonight. And
we're not.
That's okay. But there's, like, networking and building communities with game developers is so important, right? Because I cannot tell you how many times I've been in the industry and a position will open up and I'll immediately be like, oh, I know this person would be good for that. This person would be good for that. I know a guy who did this stuff back in the industry, or back in school. Let me see if he's available or interested. Like, that stuff happens all the time, all the time.
Oh, no, for real. Like, just, I mean, you know about it. Just last year when I, like, lost my job, you know, like, I had, like, got let go from my job, and Lionel came to the rescue, like, pretty much right away with, like, he came at me with this contracting opportunity.
Yeah.
That he was able to, like, bring my way. And, like, it really saved me.
Yeah.
Because, like, I did not see that coming. I was not prepared for that. Didn't have the resources to survive at that time, right? But, like, your friends need to hear about it, and they come out and they'll help you.
Dude, that it means so much. Like,
it does.
The relationships that you form throughout your time, not only in your education, but early in your career, that stuff, like, we all leave companies and go to different places, and positions open up, and friends ask us about people from other companies. Like, it happens so much. Like, if you can make an impact on someone in a collaborative setting, in a social setting, like, when you're, the more you're around people that want to do the same kind of things, it really improves your future prospects. And here's the thing. It's not about hedging your bets on that, right? Like, you're not out saying, I'm meeting people because they might help me later. Like, if that's your mentality, that's not going to work for you, because everybody feels that. It's very icky. Like, it's not.
You can always tell.
Yeah, you can always tell. Like, you're absolutely right. Like, you feel it. But when you're making real relationships, which is just like, hey, we vibing together, we talking about games, we work together on something, or we talk about something I've worked on, and people get a sense of what you like and that you're capable of and what interests you, when something opens up, they'll think of you. And that is huge, absolutely huge.
Yeah, no, like, for real. And, like, you know, those people, like, you make these connections with people, and they're, like, they have your back. And also, you know, like, you're meeting with, like, you know, not only that, but these are like-minded people. You're making lifelong friends here at the same time.
Yeah.
To me, you know, like, that's what's most important, obviously, is just making, like, me and you, right? Lifetime friends, you know what right. I mean? That's just, like, that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's what it should be about. You should just be trying to connect with people.
Yeah, because I'm like, they're going to have the same interests as you, more or less, so you're going to hit it off regardless. Just be friends with them, man.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the easiest way to think about it, because a lot of people often ask me, like, how do I network? How do I get to know people? How do I meet people in the industry? It's honestly really just about making friends. And if that's the way you think about it, you're going to be successful, because you're trying to connect with people. You're not trying to utilize people, right? the utilization comes when those opportunities present themselves, because you were genuine in trying to make those connections with people in the beginning. It's if you're doing it the right way, it'll become valuable to you.
Yeah. And it's just like another like big thing is, you know, you friends with these people, and like, if you do get let go from something, like people just, you don't got to tell anybody, people just find out, you know what I mean? They'll just know. Cause I remember one time I was like, I think my contract ended or something. And then, yeah, I went to this online Full Sail networking thing. And somehow they knew already. And they're like, man, you need something? We got you. And I was like, that's awesome. I didn't even know these guys. They're just Full Sail people, man.
Well, that's another thing to talk about, because Full Sail grads are all over every industry in the entertainment, oh, yeah, right? And when I went to Volition, there was a dozen Full Sail grads there, right? So I immediately had a connection group of people that had common backgrounds, right? And so we spoke the same language. It was easy for us to connect and get to know each other. So it wasn't like I was like, hey, I'm the new guy, who do I get to know? It was like, oh, there's a group of people that I know have at least some common interests that I can get to know. That's a big deal.
Oh no, it is. Like, I think, yeah, basically every studio I've worked with, there's except for the one I'm at now, but all the other ones, there's always one person at least that is on my team that went to Full Sail, and they know.
Yeah, it's and this isn't a Full Sail specific thing, right? Like, it can be like, you can take this mentality forward anywhere you go. Just think about the things that matter to you, right? Like, what do you, are you a board game person? Are you a tabletop gaming person? Like, the thing that interests you, just make sure you reach out to the entire new group and be like, hey, this is what I'm curious and interested in. Is there a group for this? Are there people that talk about this? Like, there's easy ways to make those connections, because the connections happen generally outside of the game specific stuff. It's more about your interests and the things that you care about.
It's true. Yeah.
So we got about 10 minutes or so left. And
Are we going to get into those crazy questions that you ask at the end?
Oh, do you want to do that now?
We could do it now if you want. Or we can keep going on the Full Sail track. No, I mean, it's all the same to me, man.
We've got a couple of options. We can talk about, so we haven't talked about your final project. And we haven't talked about the dev round, which is those questions. So you tell me which sounds better, and then whichever one we don't do, we'll do at the beginning of the next one.
I feel like I had a good answer for the dev round. All right,
let's do it. That's what we're going to do.
Okay.
Let's do it.
All right, we'll do the dev round then.
All right.
When we get into the next one, we'll do the, I'll talk about, we'll save the best for last, all right?
We will start the next episode with that, and that's going to be great.
Yeah.
All right, first question. What's your favorite game of all time, and why?
Yeah, I've done a lot of thinking on this, right? I'm, like, trying to think. I'm, like, what was that game? Even if it wasn't, like, the best mechanically, but what game did I have the best memories with?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it always comes back to Halo 3.
Halo 3, okay.
When, Halo why 3 is that? Specifically. It was the first game to introduce me to a level creator.
Ah,
first game to show me that I could, like, that I could build stuff, you know. And also, it was the first game I ever played online with people.
Okay. That
totally. And I just remember sense. Like, yeah, I mean, like, I just remember those nights, you know, be up until 3 a.m. In my friend's dad's basement, just playing Halo 3, you know what I mean? Just going online and talking trash and all the fun stuff, drinking a lot of Mountain Dew.
yeah. No, that totally makes sense. I get that. All right.
Yeah, man.
Now, this question I find interesting to someone who's early in their career, so I'm curious to hear what you think about this. When did you first feel like you had made it as a game dev?
Ooh, I feel like I had a couple different moments, right? It can't just be like one moment. I definitely think the very first time I felt it was, and this kind of ties back to that final project, when we finally released the game, because after we finished our final project, we spent months, we'll get into it in the next one, like I said, but we spent months getting it all ready and fixing bugs and trying to get it ready for Steam, and then we finally did it, and then Steam didn't even notify us that the game went up, I found out like 3 days later that the game was live. And it we got super, super lucky. And when the game went up, it was like one of only three games that went up on that day.
Okay.
And some YouTuber had picked it up immediately.
That's nice.
And like, it was probably like a month later, I was just like on YouTube, and all of a sudden there was a review for it on YouTube. Then there was a bunch of reviews. There probably ended up being like 50 different, like, there was reviews, there was gameplay walkthroughs, there was people talking about it. I didn't get the best ratings, but that doesn't matter. I was just excited to see people like experiencing it and playing it. Yeah. It was just like, there was something about like watching them play this thing that we'd spent so much time and energy on. And it was awesome, man. Just getting to watch that, watching all these reviews, watching people talk trash about it, trying to beat it, finding the Easter eggs. It was awesome.
Shout out to Magic Mouse.
Shout out to who said it. There we go. Shout out to Magic Mouse.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, Magic Mouse was it was the first game that we put out, and it actually ended up being fairly successful. The game ended up something like almost 20,000 downloads.
Really?
It was free. Yeah, and like for a free game that nobody had ever heard of. I was like, that's kind of
impressive.
I was going to be happy to get 100, right? But like, yeah, it got that, and I was like, that's what I wanted to see. That's awesome. It's like exceeded expectations. I think the next time was when it's my first job in the industry. I was working for Epic on Fortnite, and we had like just released one of our events. I think it was the first event of its kind at the time. I think it was like the Travis Scott concert or something
that we did. That was a big deal.
Yeah. And I just remember going online and just watching all the feedback, and just like everybody was going crazy over it and saying how awesome it was. That was probably like the next one right there, which is like watching people like react to like the thing once again that we'd worked so hard on, like seeing people play it and experience it and review it. It's just awesome. Even if it's bad feedback, man, I love it. I love to see it.
Yeah.
I just need to see you playing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's everything's not for everybody. So you can't expect always to have good responses, that kind of thing. But man, I'm with you. Like, I want to see people. If people are talking, that's a good thing.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. As long as they're talking about it, that's just, yeah, that was it. And then like, you know, recently, of course, I started working. I worked for Bungie, which was actually like one of the first companies I ever wanted to work for. I did that for a while. And then now I'm working on, you know, Halo, of all things.
Yeah.
Oh, the game that started it all for me. We're back. It's come full circle. We're back here. Back at it.
I can't wait
that's
to
just
talk
crazy
about your career part. Like that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we get into it next time. It's been a wild ride, I'll tell you what.
I can't wait. All right, we got a couple more questions.
Yeah, man.
We got a few more, actually.
Ooh, okay. Let's get it.
What's your passion in game development? What like really gets you going?
Oh, level design.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's probably my favorite thing. It's just like making levels. Definitely what I want to do eventually. They're pretty tough to find like those kind of jobs, but like that's what I want to do at the end of the day, is I just really want to make levels professionally. Even when I'm not doing it professionally, like on the side, I'm like, I always got like a side project I'm doing level design for, you know what I mean? I gotta keep at it.
What about that kind of resonates with you? Is it the, like you want to see someone, like you want to know someone's experiencing some cool shit you made, or like what kind of sticks out to you?
Yeah, that's what I think I like the most about it, is like you're making this like, you know, like I feel like with games, like it's like one of the things that you almost always walk away from, right? Is like the level or that place.
Mm-hmm.
It's like right there with all the other stuff, like the music and this stuff. But like, even if the game didn't have good graphics, you still might remember how cool that one level was.
Yeah.
And I don't know, ever since like, you know, those level creators back in like Halo 3 and even like Far Cry and stuff, I just loved making these wacky experiences for people to try out and mess around in.
All right. That totally makes sense. All right. What advice would you give to someone who's trying to get their first job in the industry?
Ooh, that first job in the industry. This is like, I think one of the most important pieces of advice that has helped me and it has got me like probably all of my jobs so far is like LinkedIn. You gotta be on LinkedIn. You gotta keep that LinkedIn page like updated. You just gotta be like on LinkedIn. You gotta apply for jobs on LinkedIn because that's where the recruiters find you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's my experience. That's how I found like all of my jobs is through like a recruiter typically on LinkedIn. Keep that up to date. Like, you know, make sure you're putting anything you're working on there, post on there. Just, yeah.
All right.
Network, yeah. Right?
That's always the most important thing.
That's default, though. I don't got to say it.
I mean, LinkedIn is networking, right? So that totally makes sense. It is
virtual networking.
All right. You ready for my favorite question?
Oh.
If you were born in 1870.
Ooh, okay, good. It's 1870.
What would you be doing right now?
Oh, man. So I thought about this one, right? I think honestly what I would do if it was 1870, if I could do it, I would be a gunsmith.
Okay. So you want to like create weapons from scratch? Like, is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. Either like make them from scratch or like, make them from scratch, like make new weapons for people. Like, cause like at the end of the day, what is it? You're weapon balancing, you're testing, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty close to the. And also, like, before I wanted to go into games, that's why I was saving this one for later. Actually, I did consider, like, doing something like that, like, because there was classes you could take for that kind of stuff. I considered, like, making firearms.
Interesting.
Because it was something I was kind of passionate about back in the day, because being in Alaska, there's a lot of hunting, my dad showed me, like, everything there is to know about them, like, how to take them apart, clean them, build them. All that stuff. So, like, for a while, I did consider something like that.
Yeah. All right.
So, if I was in 1870, that's what I'd be doing. I'd making guns.
That totally makes sense. What about 2070? You're born in the future.
2070? Ooh, is it like the dark future with cyberpunk here?
I mean, that who knows?
Can I be an edge runner or something? Like,
at this point, whatever you think is going to happen, you know, 50 years from now is fair game.
I mean, right. I feel like it's the easy answer for a lot of people. If it's 2070, like you could still make games. Like there's nothing stopping absolutely. You
yeah.
from you making games, right?
I think it's what I would do, but
yeah, I'm like,
it'd be
a
very different
like,
experience probably, right?
What else? What else would I be doing if I wasn't like making it's already the future. People are gonna games aren't gonna die or nothing. I guess unless it's the dark future, then you might have to pivot course and become a cyberpunk or whatever, but you know. We're gonna go.
Scovey in the chat says filling in prompts to have AI make games for you.
Ooh, hey, you know, if the AI take over like that and they're making all the games for us, then you know what? I'm just going to become a solo then. I'll just do odd jobs around town. Just give me my cool jacket that weighs about 20 pounds and an oversized chrome pistol and I'll just become a solo.
Oh, man. All right, last question. Who do you think should come on my show next?
Ooh, who do I think should come on your show next? So, okay, I was thinking about this one. And I think the person that I want to nominate, because I think he's got a lot to offer for the show, and he's someone that I'm 99% sure hasn't been on the show yet, unless I missed something. And I think he might even be in the chat, so if he's still in the chat, then he'll see it. But I think you should get Joshua Nieves on here.
Oh.
Another one of your...
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's another one of your students. Yeah, so. Yeah. But yeah, he's a game designer out in I feel bad for not remembering the company off the top of my head, but he's out in Texas. He's a game designer out there, and I think he's got like I don't know. His story sounds like it'd be pretty wild, so I think we should find a way to get Joshua Nieves on here.
All right. I like it. All right, man. We have hit time.
We did. Man, that was like, it goes by so quickly, man. Way I was just fast. Like, we didn't even scratch the surface.
I'm telling you, man, that's the best conversations when you're like, oh, we're out of time and we didn't touch anything yet. Great. It means we can do it again.
So. Yeah.
But you and I will talk about the next time to have you on and continue this discussion. Man. Who knows? It might even be three. We'll find out.
Oh, I'm sure we could probably make four conversations out of all the adventures we had, man. We'll find something.
I'm sure that we could.
You got to get me one of those. I need a Spider-Man 2 shirt so we can match again.
I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I've only got one of those. I haven't even shown it to the public yet, so I'm just saying.
Are you pretty sure you can't show it? It's probably got spoilers on it, doesn't it?
No, I can wear it. I just, I'll get it on there soon. We'll do it soon. But
all right, next time I'm on, I want to see it.
All right, we'll see.
we'll see. Oh, next time I'll bring my I'll bring the corgi on the camera. Next time
you got a corgi next time too. I'm on.
I do. I would get her, but she's downstairs right now, probably sleeping. She was in here earlier barking, so I threw her out.
Dude, we're 100% having a digital corgi party next time. That's
oh, awesome. Yeah, I'll get the I got to figure out how to do two cams at once or something, right? Like, I'll just put this cam on the floor and you can just watch Sammy fall asleep and do nothing.
It sounds like a plan.
Or I can bring the husky in here, the husky puppy in here too, and you can watch him fight, but.
Dude, like, so you got, see, I've got a Great Dane and a corgi, and you've got a husky and a corgi. Husky was like my dream dog growing up. That was what I always wanted. But then I found out how much they're a pain in the ass. So I moved toward the Labrador and Great Dane area.
Yeah, good choice. So. I can't even tell you how much stuff I can't even tell you how many things this husky is eating through. I'm like,
don't give a fuck about what you want. Like, they just really don't. They're like, I'm gonna do what
Sammy,
I want to do.
Come here. Here we go. Oh, Sammy.
Oh my gosh. Oh, hi, Sammy.
Say hi to the camera, Sammy
oh,
girl.
Oh my gosh. All right, I got to bring Luna next time. We're doing it. We're going to have a corgi
party. We'll do it next to here. Maybe I can get the. She's pretty light. I can get the skin. There we go. There's big Jackie
right
there.
Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh. You don't know how much I love dogs, man. Like this,
oh man,
this makes
yeah.
my day. I love it.
All right. There we go. Just a little sneak peek for the people out there. Tune into episode 2 to see the rest.
That's right. All right, man. I'm going to jump off here. Say my goodbyes. We'll talk about another time for you to join. I appreciate you joining me this time. And we'll talk soon.
Yeah, man. We'll do it again. Thank you for having me.
Sounds good, man. Talk to you later. Peace. Hey, thanks for watching. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications below so you'll know when new episodes are ready. If you're interested in the audio version of the podcast, I've got links for that in the show notes for you. And if you want to join us live and get your own questions answered, we're at twitch.tv/JamesonDorral every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Have a good week and we'll see you soon. I think about tech artists being people that are kind of a catch-all. You know, like you kind of understand a little bit of everything. At least the good ones I've worked with understand a little bit of all of that and kind of capable of at least getting their feet wet in a lot of different things on the art side of things.
Yeah, it's kind of more like a generalist is the term for it. So yeah. I guess I was more like generalist at that point. Yeah, I could touch everything and all that stuff, but I didn't dig too deep into the technical aspects of it, like the shader graph and materials and if I trigger something else happens or so it was still pretty early in that kind of techiness, but it's like the